Welcome to the podcast of Central Church. This is our latest weekly message.
Well, good afternoon. As Oren said, my name is Bryony, those of you who haven't I haven't met before. Now, this month, we have been working through the post-resurrection stories where Jesus has appeared to various people and said and done various things. So today, we're going to be looking at the story of the disciples that meet Jesus as they're walking on the road to Emmaus. So this is in Luke 24. So just before this happens in Luke's gospel, we have the account of the women who have gone to the tomb to find Jesus. They didn't find him there. The tomb was empty and they found some angels or some men in white clothes, as bright as lightning. And they said to the women, "What are you doing here? Why are you looking for the living amongst the dead? He's not here." And of course, the women run back to the 11 and say, "Jesus wasn't there. We met an angel who said he's risen." And that's where this story comes in. So I'm going to be reading today from the NRSV version. Now, it is a little bit clunky in some places, but it highlights a few things about the language that Luke has used as he's written it, which I think is helpful for us as we look at it today. So I'm going to read the story for us to start off. We got it there? Great. "Now, on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all of these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, 'What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?' They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, 'Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?' He asked them, 'What things?' They replied, 'The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all of this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women from our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him.' Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on, but they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it's almost evening. The day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. So Luke, as he tells this story, doesn't explain to us where these two are going or why they've headed out on the road to Emmaus. It's possible that Emmaus is where they came from, where they lived, they're returning home. Maybe, like many of the disciples, they were from Galilee, much further north, and that they're heading to Emmaus to stay the first night on their longer journey home. We're not quite sure what it is that has driven them out, but we know that they're walking with downcast faces, discussing the things that have happened to them. And I think that this might be a bit of a parallel with the story that we find in John's gospel, where he tells about Peter and the others returning to their fishing. Here we've got people who have been disappointed, returning to a distant place from where they were in Jerusalem. I think we might have all had moments like this, walking a road of disappointment. Things didn't work out the way that we thought that they might, and so we find ourselves on a road like these disciples on the way to Emmaus. Maybe somebody that you loved has passed away, or you've had a relationship broken down. You've been left brokenhearted from the loss of them. No longer you're going to hear them rework the words of every song to rhyme with poo and wee, like my dad always did. You're not going to hear their jokes anymore, have their warm snuggles in the morning. But more than that, when we lose somebody, like these disciples have lost Jesus, we also lose the possibility of our future with them. You might have had an experience like that, where you've been left wondering, how do I deal with the rest of my life now that I no longer have the role that I thought I had alongside that person? Have you had to ask yourself, who am I if I'm no longer that person's partner, no longer that person's disciple or follower? Who am I if I'm no longer my parents' child, no longer their carer? Who am I if I'm no longer a parent? Relationship breakdowns can prompt this kind of thing. The loss of a job, taking retirement, might make us also question that kind of loss of role and identity. I was once planning on working for a missionary organisation, and I lost a job that I never quite actually had. But they had offered me to go to sort of the last stage in the recruitment process, heading to residential training. And instead of taking that, I realised that I needed to embrace my full identity and come out as a queer person. Doing that put that job out of my reach. And what I was left with was a good pile of grief. Grief and confusion. I was confused about, I guess, what my sense of calling that I'd felt I'd had, about that role that I was heading towards, and then that being taken from me. And confused about what that meant if that role was no longer there. But I wasn't confused about who I was as a person at my core. But that did leave me with a fair bit of grief. Now, that might not be quite your story, but you may have experienced a similar thing, whether through breakdown of relationship, things like an accident or illness, changing the way that you thought your life was going, snatching away plans that you had and hoped and dreamed for. That's how I imagine Cleopas and his companion as they're walking down this road. They thought that they were going to be with Jesus. They thought that they had a future alongside him. And now they're left with confusion and grief because he's no longer there. Maybe they were seeing themselves in some kind of political activist role alongside a triumphant Messiah. Maybe it was Jesus's treatment of marginalized people that was attractive to them. Maybe they saw themselves in the sort of social justice scene, handing out bread and healing lepers. Whatever it was, they've lost Jesus at this point. They seem to have given up hope. They haven't just lost a future, but it seems like they are in quite a hopeless place because it was all snatched from them in quite a public, humiliating kind of way. Jesus didn't just die in his sleep. Jesus was beaten, broken, bloodied as he hung on the cross, publicly humiliated, and his followers humiliated as well. So much so, they went into hiding. And the grief that these two folks felt has driven them out. They've left the rest of the group. They're heading out of the city through the wilderness. I think it can often be natural for us when we're sad, we're overwhelmed, when dreams have been crushed, for us to kind of retreat, whether it's figuratively, emotionally, or physically. When my marriage broke down, I returned to the home of my youth, quite literally. My sister lived there, my parents were no longer there, but I was weighed down with grief, didn't really want to be living on my own, and my sister said, you know, we've got space for you, come and live with us for a while, and I did. They gave me the time and the space to deal with some of my grief around that relationship breakdown. So I think that as we see these disciples walking along, they're carrying grief with them. They have an almost comical interaction with Jesus. Somehow he manages to have snuck up on them. He's suddenly walking near them, near enough to talk to them. And he asks them what it is that they're talking about. And we know that they are kept from recognising who he is. Now, I've heard before people say things like it was the devil binding them, like so they couldn't see him. I've also heard people say, oh, in moments where we see, you know, people's eyes being closed or things, you know, hearts hardened, that kind of thing, God is doing it for a purpose because he's going to reveal it later on. And all that might be true. But I think that when you're carrying a lot of grief, it can be very hard to see beyond that. Have you ever had that sense of being so sort of overwhelmed by your feelings, whether it's grief, sadness, loss, that you can't sort of see beyond your own pain and stress, loss? When you're in that real sense of overwhelmination, you can't, you know, recognise anything that's just beyond you. I get this sense of, in the way that Cleopas describes the events to Jesus, that we've got this kind of piling up of the things that have happened. That, to me, you know, speaks of the way that I feel when I'm feeling stressed and overwhelmed by things. You know, Cleopas says, you know, this happened and then that, but we hoped, and besides all of this, and moreover, You know, we've got this kind of intensifying language about what the way that he's feeling about the things that have happened. I really get the sense that it's all just too much for them to know what to do with. And it's ironic, of course, the way that the conversation plays out when Jesus asks, you know, what are you talking about? And they respond saying, you know, are you the only one who doesn't know about Jesus? When in fact they're talking to Jesus. They're the ones that are ignorant of what's really gone on. And yet they are, you know, accusing him of being ignorant. Jesus' response to that is to call them fools, which I think is also a pretty typical Jesus kind of statement. He doesn't hold back. And so he calls them fools and slow of heart to believe. And then he gives them a systematic theology lesson all about himself. Now, they're walking for about 11 kilometres or so they've gone probably a couple of hours together on the road there, where he starts with the writings of Moses and he explains what Moses said about him. He explains what the prophets have said about him. And all of that teaching, I assume he's saying things that he's already said to them, but none of that is enough to bring them to the realization of who they're walking with. It's not Jesus' role as teacher that lets these two see who he truly is. Once they reach Emmaus, they invite Jesus to stay. He goes in with them to have dinner. And even though he's the one that's the invited guest, Jesus takes up the role of the host, takes up the bread and he breaks it and he passes it out. And in this action, their eyes are opened. They finally fully recognize Jesus. And as soon as they do, they can't see him anymore. He's not there. And then in hindsight, they recognize something about his teaching. Weren't our hearts burning within us when he opened the scriptures to us? Now, they use the same word there about the eyes being opened and Jesus opening the scriptures. When they were walking, it didn't say that Jesus opened the scriptures to them. As they were walking along, it says that Jesus explained or interpreted the scriptures. But here, they can recognize Jesus, his action of opening not only their eyes, but opening the scriptures to them as well. So what do they do once they've realized it was Jesus? They turn around and they head straight back to Jerusalem to tell everyone else that they've seen him. Now, I spent a while at Bible college learning about all sorts of things. One of the most useful things that I learnt there, in my opinion, is about the importance of context. Within this chapter, Luke has given us three stories about that happen on the same day, that involve the resurrection of Jesus. This story is in the middle, but it is the one that is the longest. Luke spends the most time here. It's like twice as long as the other two stories. It's quite common in Hebrew writings to put the most important thing in the centre and to sort of work out in parallels from there so that the first thing and the last thing said are kind of parallel to each other. The second thing, the second last thing line up, and then you get to the middle and that's what it's all about. It's called chiastic structure, if you're interested in those kinds of things. I'm not going to suggest that we have a full chiasm at work here, but I do think that the way that Luke has put his stories together is important and tells us something is central in this story. But it's curious because the two people that Jesus appears to are nobody important. We've got no other references of Cleopas in Luke's gospel. So who is he? Why are these the ones that get the most airtime? Now, it is possible that this Cleopas is mentioned in John's gospel. There's a mention of Clopas there. Bit of a different spelling, but people spell my name wrong all the time. I'm still me, so it could be the same person. In John's gospel, he is listing the women who are around the cross at the crucifixion. And one of the Marys that he mentions is the wife of Clopas. So this could be Clopas and his wife Mary on the way to Emmaus. It's possible. So it could be a bit of, you know, female erasure that we've got here. It's not mentioning who Mary is. If we look at the grammar of the words there, it does appear to be masculine all the way through. So it could be two men that are walking on the way to Emmaus. Now, of all of the early pictures that I could find, most of them depict two men alongside Jesus, and we've got one to have a look at. This is a 6th century mosaic from a church in Italy. Jesus, the central figure, wearing his purple robe, he's got a halo, it's pretty obvious that one's him. And then we've got two people with bowl cuts saying to Jesus, "Come into Emmaus with us." So, you know, queer theologians like to tell us, well, if two men are living together or inviting someone to their home, well, you know, we must know what's happening there, which, you know, could be possible. Also, who's to say they identify as either male or female? I don't know. But, there is a bit of a queer discourse out there that what we have in this story are two outsiders who no longer find themselves with a role within the church. So they've set out on their own in grief through the wilderness. Jesus has met them there. He's revealed something about himself to them, opened the scriptures to them in some way, and then they return to the group, the church, and have a unique message to share to them. Now, I'm very happy to stand up and say, yeah, queer people might find it very difficult to be in the church without a role, and that, you know, they often leave and may encounter Jesus and may come back to the church with something that we should all listen to. But I don't think that's the heart of this passage in the way that Luke has put these interactions with the risen Jesus together. So the three stories that Luke has sandwiched together have certain parallels to them. Now, being the person that I am, I used to be a science teacher, so I love a good table. I've created one for us. I don't know that this is a good table because I've got headings across the top, but I didn't put any headings down the side. But, you know, we'll work it out. So the three stories, actually I've done a little bit of female erasure here, probably worse than Luke, because I've just written women at the tomb. That was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the other women. So, you know, there's a few of them there that Luke thought it was worthy to name. So the first sort of parallel that we have between the stories is that we have some kind of otherworldly appearance. So the women in the tomb, well, not in the tomb, women at the tomb are met by some angels. obviously. Our walkers on the road are met by Jesus that they don't recognise, do recognise him in the end, and then he vanishes. The story following this, we have the 11 disciples and all those gathered who have just heard the story of the Emmaus Road. Jesus suddenly is standing amongst them. And the language that's used there is quite specific. He doesn't walk into the room. He is all of a sudden standing. So how we got there is quite the mystery. They also don't, well, they do recognize that it's Jesus, but they think he must be a ghost. So once we've had the appearance, we then have a question, and it's a question that kind of implies that you've missed the point. You haven't understood what's going on. So the women have gone to the tomb and the angels say to them, "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" When they're walking along on the road to Emmaus, Jesus is like, "Well, what things are you talking about?" And when he appears to the 11 and everyone else, he says, "Well, I'm here. Like, why are you troubled? Why are you doubting?" After that, he asks the question. They respond in some way, but then there's more of an explanation. And, you know, not just a, this is what you, this is actually what's going on, but there's also a bit of, didn't I already say this to you language in there. So the angels say, remember what he told you? The Son of Man must be crucified and on the third day raised again. And when the angel said that to them, the women remember, yeah, he said that, and they run back. Jesus, you know, calls them fools, says, was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into their glory? When he appears to the 11, he says to them, this is what I told you when I was still with you. Can I get any clearer? I've said it before. And then we have some kind of response. So Mary and the other women run back to the group to tell them this is what happened. They run back and witness. The two on the road to Emmaus do the same thing. They've told Jesus you can't keep walking because it's nighttime. But once they've realized that it was Jesus, they get straight out the door, run back to Jerusalem, tell everyone we saw Jesus. Now, when we get to the last story, they don't head out and tell anyone immediately. Jesus actually says to them, you are witnesses. And in Luke's gospel, he says to them, you need to just wait in Jerusalem. You will witness to the ends of the earth, but wait until you get the Holy Spirit. And then we have the story of him going up to heaven, however that happened. But that's not our story today, so we don't have to worry. So here's all of our similarities between the stories. What is it that stands out that's different about this central story? What makes it the part that Luke has put into the middle, given the most airtime? There's nothing on the table there to give us the answer. But what I think is, you can disagree with me if you like, but we've got these two. They've left the others behind, weighed down by grief, disillusionment. They're met by Jesus on their journey through the wilderness. He walks with them through that time of suffering. Now, despite their confusion and sadness, their bodies do actually recognize something of him in that moment. In hindsight, they said, you know, weren't our hearts burning within us? So perhaps if they'd been able to be present enough to their own bodies fully, if they'd been able to put aside their grief, they might have recognized him straight up. If they were fully embodied, as if you will, they might have been able to see the truth, but their grief was too strong. They reached Emmaus, they offered him hospitality, and their eyes were opened, their hearts, their minds were open to the truth of who Jesus was as he broke that bread. And so when I read this, to me, that is what is central to these stories, the breaking of the bread. I'm not quite sure what it is that happens for these folks when they see Jesus break that bread. Do they remember being on a hillside in the country with Jesus and him breaking the bread to feed thousands of hungry people? Do they remember Jesus as generous provider, a loving and generous person? These two were not part of the 11, in the upper room of the Last Supper. But they might have heard the disciples discussing that. They might have heard that Jesus broke bread and said, "This is my body." That he poured out the wine and said, "This is my blood." They might have heard that story. But Luke doesn't tell us that they know that. But as readers of Luke's gospel, we would have read that, a page before. So whether or not something really happens to these two disciples to open their eyes and their hearts, as readers, our eyes and our hearts can be opened by this. We can be reminded of what Jesus has said about himself, about the things that he's done. The fact that before he died, he said it would happen. And he said that his disciples were to break bread together, to drink wine together, to remember him through that way. And maybe this is really, part of Luke's trying to help out the early church. He said that he wrote this letter to, give them confidence in the things that they've read, been taught, sorry. So, early churches are doing this kind of thing. Luke is saying Jesus wanted you to do this in this breaking of bread together. We recognize Jesus for who he is. Jesus had told them before that he would have to suffer before he entered his glory, but they hadn't expected his suffering. Yet in the midst of their own suffering, Jesus revealed to them his suffering alongside them. He revealed it to them in a way that was able to sort of sink down into their body. He revealed not only his suffering, but his love, his generosity, and his care. Once Jesus rose, he didn't come back to claim political power. He didn't rise to take out vengeance on the people that had killed him, on the people who had crushed him and bruised him. He takes all of that suffering into himself and doesn't return it against anyone. So the bigger picture that we see of Jesus when we look at who he truly is one of love. He returns to his friends, to those in need, and says, as he breaks the bread, "This is what I've done for you." So we have an invitation today to see Jesus in that. To see Jesus who gave himself up for those that he loved. I mean, Jesus told us himself, greater love has no man but he that gives himself up for his friends. And that is what I think the breaking of the bread shows us. Well, I think we're going to break some bread together as well.
Thanks for listening. If you want to check out more about Central, visit us at centralchurch.org.au. Music by Chris D'Souza, a beloved member of Central.